Good morning, everyone. At least it's morning when I started filming this. I'm Frank Vaughn. It is May 11th, 2026. I turned 46 years young yesterday, so I'm in my first day of my 47th year. And it has been a bit of a break since the month of May began. I have not been as diligent with the video making, but I have gained a bit of clarity. I think I've defogged my brain somewhat. My opinions haven't changed, unfortunately, for those of you who hate what I have to say about the Trump administration as it relates to the Iran war and a few other topics. I remain convinced that it was a mistake and a terrible, terrible idea to get involved. I don't know how it's not clear to anybody now. What are we at? Day 71, 72 of the 24 to 48 hour war. The world is slowly snowballing its way towards a crisis. Strategic oil reserves the world over are being drained to try and plug the hole and keep oil prices down. The paper market is doing all the fakery it can possibly conjure to try and keep a lid on something that is going to burst loose during the summer and into the fall. It's going to be very bad news for those of us who like nation states, those of us who like human rights, those of us who don't like lockdowns, don't like government overstretch in our lives. All of these things are going to make a comeback. And let's deal with the hantavirus. Let's deal with that first. First, let's check in with our live mainstream media correspondent, Frank Van. Frank, how's it going right now with the hantavirus? Sounds about right. Trust the mainstream media for accuracy. Let's go to our next graphic. Hanta, in Hebrew or Hungarian, means nonsense, lies, or a scam. Now, this isn't to diminish the people who are sick from this very real mouse vectored virus, but the fact is, it's not going to jump from humans to humans. This isn't COVID 2.0. And we can probably all relax. I'm not really sure why it's getting the splashy headlines. Maybe it just gets clicks. People want to be scared of disease. Remember how effective C-19 was. There's still people out there running around in masks. Hard to believe. In 2026, if you go on social media and you search COVID is airborne, you can still get hits to this day. Pretty wild stuff. And that was a very low case fatality illness. Hantavirus absolutely has a much higher case fatality. But the devil's in the details. It doesn't jump from human to human. If it does, that'll be sus. I guess we should keep an eye on the story. But for now, Hanta, 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 it is nothing, but that's not going to stop. We are an equal opportunity channel here. We like to tell the truth, and so we take pot shots at everybody. And I just want to highlight this one. Died Suddenly says, and this is a very real thing. I'm not going to sit here and try and diminish that there was a real problem with the medical experiment, which has still not been addressed by anybody. So with that truth established, we got to look at this. Died Suddenly says the Hanta virus is listed as a side effect of the C-19 medical experiment in Pfizer's own documents. But of course, the headline and the video doesn't tell you the devil in the details. Anybody who got anything that had been post-vaccination, it was listed as a potential side effect. You can't get Hanta virus from a vaccine unless, of course, it was put there. But the data that they're talking about, which a lot of internet commentators are making a lot of copy on, they don't even understand, or they're deliberately obfuscating how the data was collected and what the data means. It doesn't mean the hantavirus it doesn't mean that the medical experiment caused the hantavirus. I mean, there's enough bad news when it comes to the medical experiment. Medical complications, people dying, there's a plague of kids dying of cardiac issues. And there isn't anybody in power who's asking questions about that. In fact, the president, who, I mean, again, people. This was the guy who was behind Warp Speed. There is this narrative out there that he saved the planet from 10-year lockdowns by doing Warp Speed. He actually saved us. He did us a favor. Warp Speed created the medical experiment and unleashed it on the world. And he might not have jabbed it into the arms himself, but it enabled the tyranny that everybody went through, being demonetized, being debanked, being locked in their homes, being threatened with no work, having your prime minister go on French television, speaking of Trudeau, and saying, do we tolerate these people who want medical autonomy? There was a time when Doug Ford was walking around saying, if we got to go door to door to get needles and arms, we're going to do it. Warp Speed enabled all of that. You should be critical. RFK was critical. I guess he put it aside because he wanted to go and work at the FDA and he wanted to go to work at the CDC to do good things. And so he dropped that fundamental condition to actually working with the Trump administration. And to Trump's credit, he's made good on that. RFK is still in there. It doesn't look like they're... I had this feeling when I could see how things were kind of going this time around that RFK would run loose and run rampant for about 6 months to a year, and the drug makers and the manufacturers would come along, demand his removal, and Trump would remove him, and it would be this feud that would get some attention. That hasn't happened. That's good. That's a feather in Trump's hat. Look, it's not all bad news when it comes to this administration. It's just that the bad news that I'm giving you about the administration will... It threatens the existence and the base of all the good news, dealing with illegal immigration, dealing with the drug problem, dealing with the cartels, focusing on North America, doing the best that we can for ourselves here. The idea of creating healthy food supplies and actually re-examining all of these drugs that these manufacturers are rolling out and just pumping into people. Remember when Ozempic was, we were told that was safe and perfect? Well, there's all kinds of consequences from Ozempic. Like, I can't believe that I know people personally who were smart enough to avoid the C-19 scamdemic, but they walked right into taking Ozempic and then dealt with the consequences of that. I mean, I could talk about that in depth. I don't want to today. It is healthy and right for you to be skeptical of medical products, just like you should be skeptical. You're going on Amazon. You're going online. You're buying some kind of consumer product. The first thing you should be doing is watching reviews. And then you should make sure that those reviews themselves are not monetized by the product company, the product maker's company that you're buying from. You want impartial reviews. You want to read. You want to do your research. It's the same with drugs. You should absolutely have full and maximal control over what goes in your body, and you should be cautious. But back to the point. Beware of fake news from all sides. Moving on, I've got like 100 tabs open. We're going to see if we can move through a bunch of them today. This is just live breaking news coverage from Al Jazeera. Trump says ceasefire with Iran on massive life support. Whereas he also called, actually, you know what we could do? We just go over here and we could look at the actual individual. Like, okay, first off, let's just talk about Trump's Truth Social. It's just... I used to think Trump's braggadocious nature, the way that he promoted himself, because there's a story of humility in Donald Trump. There actually is. This is a guy who had a broken down limo on the side of the road. A bystander or somebody he was driving by stopped and helped him out, and he paid off the guy's mortgage just for helping him out. There's all kinds of stories around Trump like that that he does not talk about. It's like there's some really good material. I remember this back in 2016 when I was researching him and trying to figure out who this guy was, because I didn't know anything about him. He was a reality star and a real estate guy. That's all I knew. Very superficial. And I did this deep dive on who he was, and I went through all the negative stuff they were saying about him. And I'm like, I came back with a conclusion. He's a bit of a philanderer. He's not exactly faithful in his marriages. Maybe in the current one, but who knows? Not really my business. But there was all these good actions that he had taken over the course of time that he never talked about. And I thought, you know, that's a bit of humility when you're not celebrating the things that would actually help you out. And I always thought the braggadocious thing that he does, the self-promotion, was just, it's trolling people who hate him. It's actually generating, it's giving them fuel. It's giving them hate fuel to keep his name in the media and do all that sort of stuff. But I'm telling you, man, it's harmful. At this point, it's gone from a tool to being toxic. And I mean, all you got to do is scroll through his Truth Social, and this stuff is not working the way that it worked in 2016. It works for his base, but his base is shrinking. And that's just how it is. Look, it just goes on and on and on and on and on. He takes a shot at Neil Gorsuch, somebody that this pretzel logic. Let me just read this. I love Justice Neil Gorsuch. He's a really smart and good man, but he voted against me and our country on tariffs, a devastating move. How do I reconcile this? It's very honest because he has to reconcile it. He, in his own mind, cannot be wrong, and he did this to himself at the recommendation of other people, people he shouldn't be listening to, people he shouldn't be listening to today. At any rate, where is it? Where is the relevant tweet? Did I already go past it? Where he basically just says there we go. I've just read the response from Iran's so-called representatives. I don't like it. Totally unacceptable. Thank you for your attention in this matter. Those pesky Iranians just don't seem to understand how bad they're defeated. The nerve of them. They are totally devastated, and they keep on thinking they're not. Now, look, bringing it down. Do you think there's just a chance, just a sliver of a chance, when if you get outside the mainstream media bubble and you get outside of Promethean Action and you get outside these, what I call Q 2.0, Project Truth 2.0, you get outside these echo chambers and you just look at Telegram, you look at social media, the daily rallies in support of the government that the bombing campaign has triggered in Iran. Remember, they told you the Iranian regime was teetering on the edge of crumbling. That was what they said before they started killing, like when they went in and they did the decapitation strikes. They said it was only going to be 24 to 48 hours, and then it was going to be 4 to 6 days because they were on the verge of collapsing. People are going to rise up. It's going to be great. How is it that people just ignore? Like, there's people who've got lots of criticism for me constantly in the comments section. People who should know better. You got lots of criticism for me, but you never hold them accountable for the things that they say that don't happen. And there's never been a time in the 10 years of the Trumpian era, there's never been a more concentrated time than in the last 2 months where the things that Trump and Bessent and Witkoff and all of these characters say and actual results. They keep saying things that don't happen over and over and over and over again. And I just have to wonder, at day 70 odd of the 1 to 2 day war, when are people going to wake up that things are not going properly and that there's a disconnect, that Trump thinks the Iranians are defeated, but they are convinced that they are not. In fact, they're just getting ready to fight. Khamenei orders Iran's army to continue decisive operations. This from the cradle. Again, no mainstream media source out there, no Q 2.0 source is going to read the cradle, let alone put it in their videos. There's this whole wide world of information out there, and you got to tap into all of it. You know, it's interesting, and this is a segue. You know, and I realized something else too. I've just multi-segued right there in one moment. First off, I'm always struggling with, and I've been struggling for the last week, what the point is. What's the point of making videos? What are people even doing? And I hit on an insight this morning. A multi-layered insight, actually. There's actually a lot going on in my head today, and it's hard to keep it all in order. But when I was farming, I produced the finest quality, chemical-free produce that money could buy. And I sold it at very competitive prices. And I worked very hard on that. My concept of farming is derived from working 5 acres maximally. I used to have to do like the census, which is a whole other thing. There's the census and then there's the farm survey, I believe it's called. And I used to have the farm survey people call. And I would answer their questions and I would trigger nothing but red flags. Not red flags, but like additional information required windows is how the ladies used to describe. It was always women that would ask these questions, and they would say that these windows would pop up with my farm as to like needing more information. And the reason was we actually turned a profit. That was the problem. Because after knowing farmers for so many years back in Ontario, I can't speak for how things are in Saskatchewan, but debt is, it's the basis of farming for a lot of operations in Ontario. It is the acquisition of debt, not the making of money. But I digress. When I did that work, people weren't just buying my product. They were buying me. That's what they were buying. And that was a realization I came to at some point during my farm life, that it wasn't, we had to have the product as a base, but they were loyal to us. They were loyal. They trusted us. They trusted us to feed their families food that wasn't laced full of chemicals. And that was the relationship. And they got to know you. And it wouldn't have mattered what we... There were times in very hard seasons where the sampling of produce on the table, the best we could offer, wasn't very good. And people would still come and buy whatever we had because they weren't buying it. They were buying us. And I realized this morning that that philosophy kind of applies to what I'm doing with this video work. That the information's good, the information's the basis. But it's the relationship of trust that we're building. At any rate, there's this wide world of content out there. And one of the things I realized is, because I've been watching a lot of what you would call leftist content, not leftist, but left-wing content, liberal content. I've been checking out what they do. And the thing that's really blown my mind is it's identical. It's absolutely identical. It's the same method as the Q 2.0 content and the conservative content. They use the same thumbnail styles. They use the same grabby headlines. They just spin it in a completely different way. If you put them side by side, the only difference is the skew. It's pathetic. Nobody's thinking outside the box. Nobody's doing anything creative. Nobody's doing anything original. I shouldn't say nobody, but it just there's a distinct lack of originality. Everyone's copying what works. Everybody's got a method. Everybody seems to have a business model. At any rate, the cradle is not one of those places that anybody's going to cite. They're ready to fight. The Iranians just refuse to admit that they are defeated. Here's the mood. Major biblical river dries up as Bible predicted would happen before Armageddon. The Euphrates River is one of the most important waterways in Western Asia. But water levels have dropped to record lows, sparking fears among believers that a book of Revelation end times prophecy could be coming true. And that involves the drying up of the river and the paving the way for the 100 million man army from the east to march into the Middle East. I can't imagine why people might be worried about that right now, considering the world is being cut off from fertilizer and oil, and how future famines and oil price spikes and the end of the petrodollar and basically a resumption of hostilities, which we'll get that out of the way. I wouldn't expect it to happen this week. I made a tweet yesterday, I think it was, and I said, escalation that happens on a weekend is controlled. Escalations that happen on a Monday are uncontrolled. And that was not a, it wasn't supposed to be a prediction of what happened today. It was just a general observation applicable to modern times and this particular period of time that we occupy that may go by the wayside, may require revision. But at the moment, it seems to be a valuable lesson. If the escalations happen, if a bombing campaign starts late Sunday night or Monday morning, you know it's all the way. Because the people who are doing the market fakery, the people who are pushing the paper, the people who are suppressing prices, the people who are releasing strategic reserves to try and hide the impending oil crisis, the people who are just ignoring what's going on in fertilizer in many places in the world, an escalation on a Monday would mean they don't care about prices anymore. They're just going for it because it's the last move they've got. I think we're approaching that moment. There is the Donald Trump, I don't need to bring anything up. There's the Donald Trump Xi summit. He's going to China from the 13th to the 15th. Just so happens that that'll lead into the weekend. I fully expect hostilities to be running rampant by next week. We'll probably get through this week. Enjoy it, because this next chapter in hostilities is going to be the loudest and biggest and most boisterous and most destructive. It's going to make the problems that we have already coming to us, because we do, 10 times worse, maybe more. Now, a fellow in my comments section who's been around for a long time, Jacob Wiebe, that's my attempt at pronouncing your name, sir, if you're watching this. He's a driver working with farms, delivering seed, moving crop around, getting ready for this $20 billion project that's going on around Canada right now called Putting the Food in the Ground. Futures food, the future, the food of tomorrow. We're eating yesterday's food today, and we are planting tomorrow's food. And even though the agricultural industry is dependent on diesel fuel and fake things like DEF, but that's a whole other story, there is no cities. There are no cities. There is no modern civilization without the surplus in food that we create because of heavy mechanization and technology. And the good news that Jacob brought to the table was, and actually makes perfect sense, he said something like, he's dealt with 30 farmers so far this year. They all bought their fertilizer last fall, smart people. But part of that, too, is in the Northern Hemisphere, it's much easier to have all of your supplies for next year's crop on hand already so that you don't have to try and navigate the spring. This spring's been drastic. There's flooding everywhere in Saskatchewan. Roads are washed out. Fields are underwater. Planting and seeding is going late. I still have not seen anything moving where I live. I hope that changes soon because it's May 11th and they may have bought their seed and they may have bought their fertilizer, but with the impending agricultural problem in the rest of the world, it would be nice to know that the breadbasket locally is full, right? But that's some good news. It might be a windfall year for Canadian farmers that were prepared ahead of time because the Americans are facing problems. They don't have the same climate concerns. So they can buy their fertilizer in the spring and expect it to be delivered because the roads won't be mud and they'll be able to actually get the heavy trucks to them, and it's just a different situation. 70% of them are underwater and can't afford to fully fertilize their fields, and they're dealing with a drought. And that's in addition to the fact that in the other part of the world, the old world, there's going to be a lot less rice yield. There's going to be a lot less wheat yield. They're switching from high fertilizer input crops to low fertilizer input crops, which means the yield will be down. This is a problem that's coming. But anyway, this was supposed to be the good news segment. And that is that that's gone now. And that is that Western farmers in Canada, prairie farmers, seem to be far more prepared for what's coming than everybody else, if they can get the crop in the ground. Now, back to the story. You also need water to grow a crop. There's no replacement for water. Drought kills all crops. Doesn't matter how much GMO you have. It doesn't matter how much genetic research. Doesn't matter how efficient the fertilizer uptake is into the plant. You don't have water, you don't have crop. That's one of the other problems. But it's interesting. I can remember when I was 15 years old, playing Super Nintendo, a game called Uncharted Waters 2. I was playing that game and I was having a conversation with a much older cousin of mine. And he introduced me to the concept of the Euphrates River drying up and the 100 million man army. I'd never heard of that before. And you know, here we are. A big raging war in the Middle East with Israel at the center of it all. Rivers drying up. It's almost enough to make you think. Now, apparently, moving through tabs is not my strong suit because we haven't done any of that yet today. I just want to read, though. There's a lot here in these live updates that just happened. Frustration grows among residents of southern Lebanon as fighting continues. These are the people that have been forcibly evicted by the Israeli military. About 1.5 million of them are frustrated that they've been ripped off their land and their towns have been indiscriminately leveled as the Israelis bomb the living hell out of Lebanon. The next line is, Israeli minister calls EU anti-Semitic over sanctions on settlers. So I want to get this straight and make sure everybody understands. You've got these bands of ultra-Orthodox Jews running around in the West Bank. They show up. They physically throw and evict anybody who's on that land off it. They beat them, they shoot at them, they harass them. Then they set up their little tents and they claim that land. And this is what they're doing. They're just stealing land. And the EU criticized it. And the minister says they're anti-Semitic. Do you know how lazy this is? Do you know how old this is? This idea that anybody that criticizes Israel is anti-Semitic and just hates Jews. Can they get better lines? Because it doesn't work anymore. You can't shame people out of seeing what's actually happening. They leveled Gaza. You know, one of the things I resent about Al Jazeera is they constantly use the word genocide to describe what's happening in Gaza. And I just don't think you should casually throw around the word genocide. I don't see it as a genocide. It's ethnic cleansing, which is bad enough. You're killing a lot of them, sure. Probably 100,000 or more at this point. Not to mention injuries and casualties. And this includes everybody, women and children. It's the vast majority of people who they've killed have been civilians. The population's in an open-air prison. You got the Israeli government openly talking about taking everybody that ever lived in Palestine, in Gaza, rolling them all into a concentration camp built on the ashes of Rafah. So they went in and they leveled 87% of Rafah. And now they're talking about building a smart city, which is a concentration camp, moving the Palestinians that are still alive into that camp, and then taking over the Gaza Strip for their own functions. That's what the Israeli government proposed. That's textbook ethnic cleansing. That's bad enough. We should be accurate in what we talk about. The other thing that's going on, well, just to finish up on that, this has happened to me too, ever since I started talking about Israel. People accusing me of being anti-Semitic. It's so lazy. You got to stop. Because it's just, it's every single, it's like people throwing out the label that you're a bigot or you're a Nazi or all this nonsense. The Israelis are practicing very efficient lessons learned from the regime that they like to label everybody as being whenever you're criticized or whenever you're criticizing Israel. They're deploying the methods that were perfected under that regime. That's the truth. You can call me anti-Semitic all day. You're just a loser. You're lazy. You can't rise to the intellectual truth. You can't deal with the morality or the immorality of what Israel's doing in the region right now. Another unprecedented thing, and this is, I mean, there's a lot in the Middle East that's unprecedented. It's not just rivers drying up. It's not prophecy come true. It's not like there's so much going on. The other thing that's on screen behind me right there, Israel's Ben-Gurion Airport becomes U.S. military base, officials said. Official says there should be some mention of the historic nature of U.S. forces setting up shop in Israel. It's never happened before, folks. It's unprecedented. The military buildup that is now still underway, probably approaching maximum, where all of the best American military assets, all the best interceptors, all the smart bombs, all the good stuff is being concentrated in the Middle East for what I think is the next chapter of the war. I don't have any high expectations for the summit with China. I actually think it's not going to go very good. I think we're going to come out of that more hostile than we are now. We'd be happy to be wrong. Or at the very least, Trump's going to come away with it with a very muted statement that he's going to have to try and spin up as something good. But as soon as it's over, I think the Americans are going to proceed. And they're going to proceed with their best. They're going to proceed with their most expensive stuff. And they're going to be doing it on behalf of Israeli foreign policy. That's what it is. Trump even got upset. I was reading this morning, or actually I was listening to him. He got upset about the fact that the Iranians said, if you want the nuclear dust, you're going to have to come in and dig it up. Like, you bombed the living hell out of them, and you don't want to do the work? You attacked them. A war of aggression. That's what it is. This whole concept that for 47 years, Iran has been harassing the world. They've been doing their damnedest to undermine the United States and Israel, for sure, through proxies. But come on, folks. That's what the Americans and the Israelis do right back. There's no innocence here. And when you include the Iran-Iraq war and the fact that the Americans spun that up with their ally, Saddam Hussein, before he fell out of favor and had to be taken out, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, have died in the Middle East because of American policy. You cannot, under any politically convenient math, spin up a number big enough to ever lay at the Iranian regime's feet that compares to the mass mega death that the Americans have caused to the region over the last 40, 50 years. It's not even comparable, and if you are upset by that statement, I'm sorry, facts don't care about your feelings. A phrase popularized by the right, which the right really should listen to. It's not just the left who has a problem with the facts. That much I've learned over the last 2 months. But back to the point, is American troops, American planes, doing offensive operations based in Israel. That is a geopolitical sea change. There's other things going on too. U.S. might move its troops from Germany to another EU nation. And I made allusion to this in one of my videos. I don't know if it was back in April or if it was one of the two that I put out. that it's not so much the troop removal from Germany, it's where those troops end up going. My thought was they would go to the Middle East to bolster the impending offensive operation, which I believe is going to happen. Would be happy to be wrong, but they would bolster forces there. Instead, what if the United States decides to move them to Latvia or Estonia or Poland or somewhere closer to Russia? Like, there's this whole concept that this war from, and this is from the Q 2.0 people, this war is about undermining Europe and undermining Great Britain. I watched a video content which tried to spin up that the Americans and the Iranians are actually coordinating. Thousands of people watched this video, tens of thousands, and liked it and interacted with it and commented on it. This Machiavellian master plan where the Iranians and the Americans are cooperating to take down Lloyd's of London. It's insane. Live action role play narrative building. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't match the facts. But people are so desperate. Desperate for any kind of hope. And I just, you know, I said to somebody the other day, they sent me a picture. It was taken at a Doug Ford rally in Ontario. And she said to me, and it was me and her and her husband, we're having this picture, and she said, "You remember this?" And I said, "Yep." And she said, "Those were good days." I said, "They were, because we had real hope, you know?" And I said to her, "Hope, having some hope is better than having no hope at all." But I should have also added that false hope, I don't want any of that. Like, I still, again, I just want to emphasize, like, I'm not black-pilled. Life's going to go on. Life's still not too bad. There's a lot of challenges in Canada. I haven't even got to the Khalistani rallies and the fact that we're being overrun by these really radical Punjabis who are not assimilating at all. In fact, they are working to take over our government. And if you don't think a minority can end up ruling a majority, buddy, let's just talk about South Africa, you know? Let's talk about all the different, let's talk about the Gulf Arab states, actually. Bahrain intensifies crackdown on Shia communities, arrest dozens over alleged IRGC links. This is the Sunni person riding the Shia tiger. These Gulf Arab monarchies are not popular with their people, and they are desperately afraid that if things get bad enough, they'll be overthrown, French Revolution style. It happens all the time that minorities come to rule majorities. The question for Canadians is whether or not we're going to get it together in sufficient time to actually make sure at least a piece of the country doesn't succumb to the interests of foreign nations, foreign ethnic groups, and foreign religions. Seriously, what are we doing even having a Khalistani separatist movement here? Why are these people being allowed to parade around our neighborhoods and our cities with swords? With rifles. I've seen pictures from the prairies where these guys are on the side of the roads and they've all got weapons. Like weapons, banned weapons. And they're just firing off into farmers' fields. I mean, there was a picture on Twitter. If you look at my profile, there's a guy with a crossbow. I mean, why aren't they getting arrested? I think we know the answer. Politics. Again, this comes back to what I've been saying for the last year and a half. We are in a post-law order. The rule of law is gone. It's gone in Canada. It's gone in the United States. It's gone just about everywhere. More and more, it's being made up as we go. And some of the make-believe law you might agree to. I mean, there's a huge portion of the United States and the Republican base that's very comfortable with Trump making it up as he goes. And I'm saying this, like, this is just facts. There is the War Powers Act in the United States, which says that the president has 60 days to initiate a military campaign for pure defensive reasons, but has to go back to Congress for approval. And so the way they're handling it is to just come up with a completely concocted interpretation of the law to say that the first operation is over, so they don't have to go back to Congress, and ooh, we're going to start Project Freedom, and that'll give us another 60 days, making it up as you go. It's happening here in Canada, too. The law is selective. It only applies to certain people. We have these racist laws on the books that are supposed to be protecting minority rights, but they're actively discriminating against the majority population through legal means, literally putting out job postings for official government positions where white people just aren't allowed to apply. That is racism. And then they go into your public schools and they dare tell your kids that it's impossible for minorities to be racist against whites, even though that is the most common racism that is happening today. And that is the most officially endorsed form of racism that is happening today. If you have white pigment in your skin, in particular, if you're a male white, you're being discriminated against. It is not racist for me to observe what the consequences of official government policy actually are. And this extends to militarized groups in this country. Militarized criminal gangs, militarized non-criminal groups with relations between each other who are advocating, and if, for instance, for a Khalistani republic somewhere else, some advocate for it here in Canada and do so through violent means. They're driving around in cars with AK-47s stickered on the car with phrases about fighting to the last man. They're not getting investigated. We're busy looking at the Second Sons and Diagolon, picking them apart. You know, and there's a lot of people out there who think they're feds. Maybe they are. Maybe they're not. I don't know. I don't care. I care about the fact that there is nothing but time and treasure to go after those groups, but there is no time and treasure. There's not even a dime to investigate what's happening in Brampton and in Surrey. There's barely any coverage about it. Mainstream media doesn't talk about it. Nobody does the hard-hitting investigations because they're all kowtowing. They're all afraid. They're all paid by the government now. They're all subsidized, and they don't want to upset that funding train. I do believe that there is some hope, at least as this video goes along, that there's a realization at the federal level that mistakes have been made, not mistakes, that the deliberate mass immigration that's been embraced threatens the viability of the economic engine that they want to leech off of. So it's like ticks. Actually, we'll finish with ticks. Ticks are horrible. Why aren't we dealing with ticks? I've been meaning to talk about ticks for a long time. This isn't a plague just on humanity. It's a plague on the entire mammalian kingdom. It's a plague on anything with red blood. The poor deer and bears and cougars and bobcats and everything that's outside, from the biggest mammal to the lowliest mouse, is victimized by ticks to the point of near death. Clusters of these things hanging off them. I say this because we were outside yesterday enjoying the sun. We've barely got the snow melted. We still have snow in certain spots. Like I said, the fields aren't planted. There's flooding. There's still ice in the river. There's all kinds of stuff. We haven't even gotten started yet. Pick two ticks off the kids. I am old enough to remember a time when this wasn't an issue. And they want to blame climate change. Climate change has nothing to do with it, folks. I don't know where these things came from. They've always, well, I shouldn't say that. They've always been around. There's always been ticks. But why are they a plague all of a sudden? I remember farming in Ontario. I never thought about ticks. I thought about mosquitoes and black flies and horse flies and these things. I would take 10 times the amount of mosquitoes in trade for not having to deal with ticks. They are such a plague. But anyway, back to the government. With all the money in the world, they're not doing anything to research how to deal with ticks, at least not in any effective amount. They're not treating it like the crisis that it actually is. Ticks are an actual crisis. They're a literal biological crisis that everybody's just living with and tolerating. But I digress. The government is like a tick, the elite class. They're like ticks. They require an economic engine to leech off of. They need servants. They need people to keep their food cooked. They need people to do things for them. They're good at flying around on private jets and going to meetings and talking about the problems of that class, but they need the lower classes. And I think there is some hope that they have realized that their embracement of mass immigration as a means to deal with a declining population, because everybody stopped having babies, partly because government's so big and taking so much of your income, that they made a mistake by this universal embracement of mass immigration, which is why I think the liberals are cutting, canceling permanent residencies, quietly kicking out TFWs, clamping down on student visas, and doing it in a way that if the conservatives were doing it, the media would be up in arms. They're taking action, and I don't know where it goes. I don't want to pretend that it's going to stay this way, but there's a very real risk that they must be acutely aware of, especially those who live here, that in an economic crisis, which we are barreling towards because of this war, oil, food, famines, all of these things that are coming down the pipe, if something drastic doesn't change, I don't even think it's if something drastic doesn't change. I think it's already a measure of that is absolutely going to happen. There's nothing anybody can do about it. It's just a matter of how much worse it gets at this point. This realization that in a moment like that, the only thing, when our leaders tell us that we're a post-national country with no core identity, that our institutions aren't valuable, and that the population, that's the majority population that built the country, the majority ethnic and cultural population that built the country, is to be demonized and targeted for destruction and replacement and discriminated against in terms of getting jobs. I mean, I'm fine. I've got enough percentage of native blood that I'll probably, like in the hierarchy of whatever, if I wanted to play the game, I could probably do all right just by flashing around a matey card if I decided to go and get one, which I won't. Like, I've had people tell me that all my life. Why don't you just go and get it? There's things that you could get. I don't want the free stuff. I don't want the special attention. I'm a human. I bleed red blood. I speak English. I live in this country. That's all. I want to be equal. I want to be a tax slave just like everybody else and rail against the dying of the light and hope that maybe someday we can do something good. I don't want the special stuff. But when you've told everybody you're post-national, when you've told everybody you're just one big melting pot and a cultural mosaic and all this other horse shit, the glue that holds a nation together culturally fades away. And all that's left is money. Money. Prosperity. That there's lots of food in your fridge. That you can afford to live. That the lights come on. That you can have a decent car and drive around in. And that's enough to keep everything sort of stable. But you remove that, and all of a sudden in-group preference comes roaring back, and you have ethnic conflict all over the place. I don't want that. I don't think you should want that. I don't want to see that as inevitable. And perhaps, I'm not saying for sure, but it's certainly a thought that goes through my mind, which is why I'm communicating it, especially considering the new evidence since this majority government has been elected. Perhaps they have realized that it was a mistake. And I'll finish with this. I'm actually thankful that Carney seems smart enough to keep us out of this nonsense in the Middle East. And that's about the nicest thing I'm going to say about the liberals today. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.